Okay, you're going to see some smaller banks start to go under here pretty shortly again?
Well, not necessarily smaller banks. It could be larger banks, too. Okay. We know that there's 150 or 200 smaller banks are on a watch list, and they're in dangerous situation. Let me give you an idea of how bad it is.
Bob Moriarty, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing really well. Offline, you said, hey, we're talking about this at an interesting time or a good time because it's about to hit the fan. So let's, where do we start with that? Talk me through to about, well, let's start with the banks and the financial system. This was hitting the fan, I thought, 9 months ago, a year ago. And they seemed like they stopped. Well, I don't want to say they stopped it, but they delayed that. So where are we at now?
They did. And strange enough, that's why this interview is so timely. The Fed panicked as they should have a year ago in March. And they came up with the Bank Term Loan Facility. And basically, these hundreds of banks that they've got on the list, and they know the banks are insolvent, they said they could borrow as much money as they wanted to make their numbers balance, okay? But it was a loan. It didn't create any new wealth. It was a loan. And do you know when the Bank Term Loan Facility ends?
I have no idea.
5 days from now.
So, as you said, it's about to hit the fan. So, if it ends in 5 days, well, can they do it again? I mean, that's the next question. What then? Why?
Well, that's the kicking the can down the road. And I thought the system was going to come to a screeching halt in 2008. And it came very close to it, and they poured money into the system, which, of course, just made it worse. I'm not sure. I know the term loan facility ends on the 11th. I'm not sure when the banks have to pay the money back. I don't know if it has to be paid back by the 11th or there's some schedule. However, literally trillions of dollars were advanced to these banks that are underwater, and they're still underwater, okay, if not worse. There are two issues now that are not discussed very well. One is derivatives, and the other is the banking system. The derivatives are what caused the GFC in 2008, and it was solved by pouring bales of $100 bills onto fire. And this was solved by transferring money from the Fed to the insolvent banks, but the banks are still insolvent. Let me point something out to you. I've never heard anybody say this, but it's important for your listeners to understand. Banks make money by loaning long-term and borrowing short-term.
Right.
They go out to their local neighborhood and they collect $100 million in deposits that are nothing but a loan to the bank. And then they loan out $1 billion in real estate. Now, there is an inherent problem in that because they're borrowing short and lending long. Any bank, no matter how well financed, no matter how well run, you can have a bank run. Now, I suspect the Fed is well aware if they had a series of cascading defaults in all these small banks, I think there would be a bank run. In 1932, a bank collapsed in Austria called the Credit Anstalt. It was a Rothschild bank. The Depression was on, and it collapsed. And it caused a series of cascading defaults that led to the entire banking system in the United States being shut down as soon as Roosevelt took office in 1933. And the same thing could easily happen again. But it's very important to understand a bank run has nothing to do with the quality of the bank, has nothing to do with the management of the bank. It has to do with this imbalance between short-term loans and long-term loans. So that's something. Bank runs can occur at any time. They are a psychological thing. But when the Fed and the Treasury are actually listing hundreds of banks that are insolvent, I mean, that's sending a message. The banking system, it's in very bad shape now. It's very dangerous. You've seen what's happening in China. The two biggest land development companies there have collapsed, gone into bankruptcy. One of them is being wound up, and Hong Kong is trying to wind up the other one at the same time. That's going to cause a knock-on effect. Now, let's talk about the assets of a bank. When you see a bank has $10 billion in assets, what does that mean? What are the assets? Where do they come from?
They come from people like me that have a mortgage or...
Yeah, absolutely correct. That's part of it. But what else?
They come from big commercial companies, if you would, that have commercial real estate. They come from...
That's part of it, but here's the key. They are required in most countries to invest a certain amount of money in government bonds in the theory that the government bonds are safe. So banks invest in mortgages. We know that. Banks invest in government bonds. We know that. And banks invest in the bonds of other banks because they're safe. In 2022, the highest rated gilts in the UK dropped 53% in 1 year. It was the biggest and fastest drop in English history going back 150 years. Now, something dropping 53% in a year is not what would qualify as safe. So actually, the assets of banks are very precarious. The opportunity for a cascading default is very possible. I thought it would have happened 6 months ago. I think the underpinnings of the economic market, the stock market, is a lot weaker. I've never seen some of these things that are going on, and I'm 77. Okay, I've been through major crashes. So I think we're at a dangerous time, and money in banks is particularly precarious right now.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. It feels like it. Let's scheme that what you just said out a little bit. So that's how, or I guess you should say, that's why it was such a problem when the short-term bond yields were rising, is because that a bank was actually losing money. Because these assets that they own, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm asking, the assets that they own were depreciating in value, correct?
Exactly right. If they loan money out to you for a real estate mortgage or a commercial real estate mortgage at 3%, and now they've got to pay 3 or 4% for that money, they're losing money every time you pay your mortgage. So the banks are in a no-lose situation. I'm just absolutely shocked. I think the number of PhDs at the Fed, the number that I've seen, is the Fed employs 30,000 PhDs. Now, you would think that in 30,000 PhDs, there would be one guy who can do the math and say, you know, it's really wonderful that these bonds are going up in value as the interest rates go down. What's going to happen when interest rates go up? And of course, what happens is these guys get creamed. Taking interest rates below zero or to zero is absolute insanity. It was insanity when they did it, and it guaranteed we would have crises, and the crises is here.
Okay, so the crisis is here, and then what exactly does that look like, I guess, when it's hitting? I mean, banking, and I'm thinking this is a stream of consciousness, is, okay, you're going to see some smaller banks start to go under here pretty shortly again?
Well, not necessarily smaller banks. It could be larger banks, too. Okay. We know that there's 150 or 200 smaller banks are on a watch list, and they're in dangerous situation. Let me give you an idea of how bad it is.
Please.
It was a Canadian real estate company, and they were getting demands from their investors for money. So they had to sell a building in New York. Now, when they put it on the market, they put it on the market for $100 million. Take a wild stab as to what it sold for.
$90 million? $80
million? $1.
It's worthless.
Okay, we literally are in Never Never Land. And strange enough, you ask a good question that there's no answer to. And the question being, how is this going to play out? What it's going to look like? Have you ever seen one of those giant flocks of birds flying around?
Yeah, absolutely. Every fall and every spring.
Okay, now, my wife was British. She knows what the term is. I think it's murmurants, okay? A murmurants of birds is this giant flock of birds. So you're out for a walk, and it's a beautiful fall day, and the leaves are turning color, and they're just gorgeous. And you look, and there's this flock of birds, this murmurants, okay? And one of them shits on you. Now, here's the question that you ask that is impossible to answer. Which bird shit on you?
It doesn't matter, really. Because
actually, it doesn't matter. Exactly right. So you know you've been to shit on. You're just not real sure which bird to shoot.
I'm still mad. Right. Well, okay. So let's game this out even more then. So we start getting bank failures and bank runs, if you would. And so the Fed starts printing money by any mechanism, any number of ways that they can. Let's say they start buying the short-term bonds as they did in, I want to say, 2008, if my memory serves me correctly, which I'm glad you brought up, because I remember you and going to 321 Gold in 2008. And I remember I was in the market and thinking this was the end of the world. That being said, let's say the Fed does this again, quantitative easing or whatever mechanisms that they have. Then what?
Okay, that was predicted in a book called The Fourth Turning. And The Fourth Turning predicted there are four different phases. We're in the fourth turning now. And each phase, it's about 20 to 22 years, one generation. And this started somewhere between 2005 and 2008. And there would be a move by those in power to totalitarian government. And we absolutely are seeing that. And the number of people preaching censorship, there are some things that I'm not smart enough to understand. I don't know how you could justify censorship. But there's lots and lots of people saying, you know, we need to censor people that we disagree with. And I'm just, really?
Yeah.
Isn't that like being a slave? The same thing is true of the immigration issue. I've never heard anyone actually try to justify 10 or 15 million illegal immigrants. Okay. It seems to me like that's total insanity. I hear the mayor of New York City say, well, what we should really do is we should give each of those illegal immigrants that have made it their way to New York City, we should give them $10,000. And of course, that makes me want to go to Mexico. Don't laugh at me. I agree. Sometimes I get really smart. I'm going to go down to Mexico. I'm going to buy one of those big sombreros. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to swim across the Rio Grande, or actually walk across the Rio Grande. And I'm going to say, okay, guys, I want to go to New York City. Where's my 10 grand?
And we'll put you up in a hotel, too.
Yeah, exactly. First class hotel. He wanted to justify it on the basis that they would spend the money in the economy. Okay, and that's one of those things that's true, but it's absolutely meaningless at the same time. When you were a kid, did you ever play Monopoly with somebody who cheated?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, if somebody's got the bank, okay, and they keep throwing $100 bills out, it's Monopoly money. Don't ever forget that. It's Monopoly money. And I'm wondering, how does a guy become mayor of New York City and he doesn't understand economics any better than a 5-year-old child would?
Right.
So the fact of the matter is we're in a very dangerous position because of the banking system and because of derivatives. And derivatives is actually worse than the banking system. We've got some numbers on the banking system and people monitor the banks, but nobody even knows what the total number of derivatives are because there's so many deals that are done off the balance sheet. So there's no place you can go and look it up.
Yeah, let's talk about that. And again, I remember reading your articles again years ago about the derivative problem. And yeah, let's game that out. Okay, you got a derivative problem. What exactly does that, I mean, how do you process all that? I mean, what does that mean?
You have to take it in pieces. And most of the people who talk about derivatives, frankly, they may be correct in their assessment, but they're incorrect as far as their knowledge. Okay, there are derivatives on lots and lots and lots of things.
Sure.
What financial area do 2/3 of derivatives come from?
I don't know.
$18 could be gold, could be silver. It's the interest rates.
Okay.
Do you understand that derivatives are a zero-sum game?
Yes.
Okay. It's like commodities. There's one winner and there's one loser.
Right.
Now, if interest rates change 53% in 1 year on the highest rated British gilts, what does that mean in terms of gains and losses?
You had a big winner and you had a big loser.
Absolutely correct. Now, which of those is meaningless?
Well, which of those is meaningless? If you won in the party that you won against, if you would, decides not to pay, that would mean the winner is...
You just picked up the weak point, okay? Strange enough, if someone enters into a commodities contract or enters into a derivative and they make $100 million, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't hurt the economy at all. However, if somebody makes $100 million, somebody has to lose $100 million. And you just nailed the flaw in derivatives. Now, the theory of derivatives is that derivatives spread risk across multiple people. The actual practice of derivatives is that it doesn't spread the risk, it concentrates the risk. And that's certainly what we saw with I can't even think of who it was that we bailed out the London derivatives in 2008.
Yeah, I remember that.
I think it was Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. I remember Kyle Bass, the great trader that I have immense respect for. He really, I don't want to say he created credit default swaps, but he was one of the originals. And when it all hit the fan in 2008, I remember reading an article of him saying, I became afraid that they wouldn't pay me.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that is the fatal flaw that nobody talks about. Let's say you look at gold.
Mm-hmm.
Gold has hit a new high 4 days in a row.
It looks really strong.
And it looks really strong. So you go out and buy $1 billion worth of gold contracts. And gold goes up $1,000 tomorrow. Have you made money or you lost money?
Depends on if they're willing to give you the gold.
They're not going to give you the gold. Okay, 99% of contracts are never delivered. They put up margin. But what people don't understand is that if gold went up $1,000 a day, nobody could meet the margin call. So in fact, if you buy $100 million worth of gold futures and gold goes up $1,000 in a day, you actually lost money because you lost everything that you put up in the first place and that imaginary gain. The counterparty risk is the danger of derivatives. And of course, gold futures are derivatives. So we're in really close to Neverland. I think I call it peak insanity. Yesterday, somebody announced that Joe Biden had flown in 312,000 illegal immigrants because he didn't want to show up on the books. And I thought, God, I mean, that is totally insane. I mean, these guys don't even have to walk across the Rio Grande, okay? We're going to fly them, and they're going to go to New York City, and they're going to collect $10,000. But what am I missing? I obviously am missing something here. Because that sounds like the dumbest idea I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I would agree with you. But let's get back to the derivative point, because I remember, I want to say 5 years ago, I don't remember exactly the year time to go, but the LME had an issue with nickel.
Yeah.
They couldn't cover or they couldn't meet the So let's project that into precious metals or really.
Let me talk about what the LME did.
Hey, tell me about it.
Okay. Somebody went out and bought, let's call it $1 billion worth of nickel, and a counterparty couldn't deliver.
Yeah.
Okay. So they were owed, let's say, $5 billion.
Yep.
What did the LME do?
Didn't they threaten or file bankruptcy?
Nope.
Tell me.
They canceled the contract.
That's right. They canceled the contracts. Why would you trade on the LME now?
No. Why would you trade derivatives or futures?
Exactly.
Okay. I I get in trouble with every interview. Because first of all, I don't think that manipulation is meaningful. I don't deny manipulation. All financial markets are manipulated. I just deny it being meaningful, okay? If every financial market is manipulated, why would you give a shit, okay? We know that the interest rates are manipulated. We know currencies are manipulated. We know the S&P is manipulated. We speculate about gold and silver being manipulated. But if everything is manipulated, who gives a shit, okay? Knowing that gold is manipulated, is that a buy signal or is that a sell signal? Oh, God, I think I'll go buy gold. It's manipulated. Really? That sounds like a really dumb reason to do it. But I talk about gold, and I talk about silver and platinum and palladium and rhodium as insurance policies against financial chaos. And there will be comments a lot of times after the interview. And it's not on Moriarty's stupid. Gold is money. I don't care if gold is money, okay? I own physical gold because it's an insurance policy. It's sold whether it's money or not or should be money or not. I don't care because I know the counterparty risk in derivatives is giant. I know the counterparty risk in commodities is giant. Don't even talk to me. Do not mention the B word, okay? Because the B word went from $60,000 to $69,000 to $62,000 in 2 days, okay? Excuse me. Somebody's got to be losing a lot of money. Okay, I try to stay away from those kind of investments, but we're at a very precarious time. There is a very convincing argument for owning some physical gold and some physical silver because you can have all the contracts in the world, and if gold goes up $1,000 a day, COMEX is going to cancel the trade.
Right. Then that's what you would expect to happen. And again, just stream of consciousness. So.
Well, you wouldn't expect to. Whoever was holding the $5 billion profit nickel was really surprised.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So then I guess another question then is like, how does this, we don't really know. It's just theoretical. What's next? I mean, okay, the shoe's dropping then. And then what would you be looking for?
I would be looking for that flock of black swans. I wouldn't be terribly concerned about which one of them took a shit on my head. I would be just terribly concerned because I know with that many black swans, somebody's going to want to take a dump, and you don't want to be standing underneath it when he does it.
Right, right.
There are people predicting the future. And I don't think you could predict it. I see things that absolutely stagger me. I've never read about, I've never seen. It's so precarious. Ukraine, it's the dumbest war I have ever heard of, okay? It served absolutely no purpose whatsoever. Zelensky just came out. Do you know what he said about the number of Ukrainian soldiers who had been killed?
Tell me.
31,000.
No.
Yeah, that's what he said.
That's what he said. Oh, gosh.
That's the good news. But right. The bad news is?
He's lying.
Somebody else came out with the number of Ukrainian soldiers missing, and that was 700,000. When I read that, I just went, holy cow, okay, that's a lot of missing Ukrainian soldiers. And then you look at the thing in Gaza, and I mean, Gaza is a tragedy. I don't care how you call it, you know, which side you're on, it's horrific. It's amazing that's going on. Now, let me talk to you about insanity. The smartest guy I've ever heard of defined insanity as doing the same thing again and again and again, expecting different results. There are 2 million Muslims and Christians in Gaza on the verge of starvation. There are children dying of starvation daily. Biden just announced the United States Air Force dropped food supplies to Gaza. Now, if there were 2 million starving Muslims and Christians, what would dropping 38,000 meals accomplish?
Very little.
PR. It would not even be measurable.
Right.
I was a pilot, and I know how that works. When you're flying an airplane, you got a load of MREs in the back. You have 38,000 of them. You know, it gets lunchtime, okay? So you tell the crew chief, hey, heat up some boiling water. So they didn't drop 38,000. They dropped 37,999. So we are at peak insanity. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I just know bad things are coming. It's a good time to be very, very conservative.
Yeah. About that, then, yeah, physical metals. Would you even have the stocks and the equities?
I mean, shares are fractional ownership in real assets. Now,
yeah,
are you familiar with the book, The Great Taking?
I am not, no.
Okay, you should at least look it up. Someone did a lot of research, and they wrote a book, and they called it The Great Taking. And they proved that governments have passed laws that in the case of a derivatives failure, or in the case of a massive bank failures, the government could seize all the stocks and bonds.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, he did an excellent job of documenting this, and he showed what the laws were and when they were passed and how they read. Could it happen?
Sure.
No, it couldn't.
Why is that?
Because I asked the wrong question.
And what's the right question?
Could it happen in a country with 399 million guns?
Right. No.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you'd probably want, and gaming this out, the physical stock certificate done, right?
Somebody wrote me, and I will say, it appears to me that the brokerage firms are trying to make that very difficult to do. I used to have a lot of stock certificates, and I just shoved them in a drawer. If they ever go up, okay, and my stocks never go up. My stocks always go down. If they go up, I'll be able to do something other than use them as wallpaper. But someone wrote me and said, so-and-so has said we need to hold physical share certificates. How do I get my broker to do that? And they're really making that impossible to do. They're doing that for two reasons. One is they're mentally preparing or physically preparing to seize all the assets. And the other is the IRS and taxing authorities want to know who owns what. So we're in this interesting situation that, in theory, if you were holding a share certificate, you would still have something of value. But in practice, I'm not sure you can go do that any longer. But at the same time, that goes back to my total correct question, which was not could they do this? It's could they do this in a country with 399 million guns? And I'll make a prediction, and I will assure you the chances of this happening are very good. you know, we pick up the newspaper, we go to CNN, we go to Fox tomorrow, and they said, okay, all the banks in the United States have been closed and all the stocks and bonds have been seized, and they now belong to the government. There would be a run on bullets, okay?
Yeah.
And use everyone who ever worked for the government as target practice. You are not going to steal everything that people own and get away with it. I mean, that's why they make tall oak trees and long lengths of hemp rope. So it's an interesting book. It's an interesting theory. It's just not something that I see as practical.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the fall of the Soviet Union, if you would. It was like the people that owned or stole or got the real assets and the real companies, they controlled everything, and they're the oligarchs today, if you would, is that's really made all their wealth in grabbing real assets before or during the fall.
That's how oligarchs work.
Yep. Interesting.
There's a couple of good books written by Michael Hudson about debt and oligarchs. And the oligarchs are amazing people. Do you remember Bill Gates' investment in a vaccine company where he put $50 million in? And he sold it $500 million. Do you happen to remember that?
I do. I don't remember the company name, but I do remember
that. It's not terribly important. If you called me up and said, Bob, you know, I put $50,000 into this company. It went up tenfold, and I made $500,000, okay, and you were gloating, I would think, well, hell. If I ever bought a stock that went up, I'd gloat too. However, if you're one of the four or five richest people in the world and you invest in vaccines, and then you do everything in your power to make those go up in value, and you make 10 times your money, you need money. I need money. Everybody I know needs money. Bill Gates doesn't need money. Okay. If he's gloating over making 1,000% on his investment, he is a greedy asshole. And I was so shocked when I watched him. Just he just thought he was the smartest guy since Christ was a corporal. But the oligarchs know no limit to their greed. And I believe that there's a battle going on right now between the debt-based system of the West and resource-based system of the BRICS and the East. And I think the Chinese and the Indians and the South Africans and the Russians, I think they actually understand what's going on. The debt-based system cannot continue. It is in the process of ending now, and we need to know. We need to anticipate what the future is going to look like. And I'll be candid. I think it's pretty simple. We're going to do the same thing Napoleon did. Let me show you something. Hey, can you read that?
The signe de Saint Franc.
Right. Okay. Do you have any idea what that is? It's an assignat. What is that?
It's a certificate of a franc.
Right. When was it issued? What was, who used it? What country?
I'm assuming France.
Exactly. Okay.
Yes.
In 1789, there was a revolution because the peasants in Paris,
they had enough
for wheat. Okay. Yeah. And Louis XV had bankrupted the country because he got involved in the American Revolutionary War and bankrupted the crown, okay? So there was a revolution. And they seized all the assets of the Catholic Church. They chopped the heads off 40,000 people. And they printed this paper money. And they printed it unlimited quantities. And of course, when you do that, same thing happens. It's happening in the United States and the world today. The money becomes worthless.
Right.
Assignatus fails. And then in 1795, they had another currency called the mandat, and that failed. And then in 1799, a French colonel named Napoleon took over. And he said, this is bullshit. Okay. We're going to go back to real money, gold and silver. And literally, there was a golden age for about 100 years in France. When your money changes value daily, when you have no idea of what the value of the money is going to be tomorrow, you get this giant transfer of wealth into the hands of the oligarchs away from ordinary people. The stability of every country is based on the strength and the number of the middle class.
The middle class.
When you destroy the middle class, you have destroyed your society. So we have these obscenely wealthy people. I'm not taking anything away from them in terms of brilliance. I'm just saying, at what point does it become excessive? Have you seen Bezos' yacht?
I have, actually. It looks like a cruise ship.
I have landed on aircraft carriers that were not that big.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Okay. Now then, if a guy has to have a yacht that big and his girlfriend looks like a hooker, how big a dick does he have? And the answer is not very big.
Well, we live in interesting times, Bob.
We do. And strange enough, when I was 20, I was on top of the world. I was flying the F-4, hottest fighter in the world. I thought, damn, this is really cool. I'm getting paid to do this. I take jet fuel and turn it into smoke and noise, and I get paid to do this. And I looked at really old people like you, and I said, man, I don't ever want to get to be that old. I hope something happens to me first. Yeah. And now I look at guys like you and I think, you know, my generation has really screwed it up for him, but it's his problem. It's not my problem. We're going to go through interesting times. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be very dangerous. And we'll make it through. We always do.
We always do. Well, Bob, I want to just thank you for your time. I'd love to have you on again to talk about the BRICS and working that through. I think that's really the next topic I'd love to chat with you about, and we can talk for hours. But I just want to thank you so much for your insight, your wisdom, and your time, and would love to have you on again.
I'll be here.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Bob Moriarty.
You almost screwed it up.
I always do. All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Good deal. Thank you.